So a few questions. If I meet an Amalekite, should I kill him? Question number one. Question number two. Why does God want me to kill the Amalekites? Why is that so relevant? Doesn't that seem a little cruel? It seems a little out there. A lot of people have struggles with this, myself included. What's going on here? With this strange mitzvah to genocide a nation, what's the deal? What's the shot? So, this is the type of shiur that the question might be better than the answer. That's okay. But I will want to share with you a mahalach, which helped me gain clarity. On this issue, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, in his book, writes this mahalach about wiping out Amalek. So he says like this. It says in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in 20b, that there are three specific mitzvahs which only apply when we get to the land of Israel. Okay? And these are not individual mitzvahs, but these are mitzvahs which fall on the klal, on the Am Yisrael. The first mitzvah, when you get to the land of Israel, is to appoint a king. The second mitzvah is to wipe out Amalek. And the third mitzvah is to build the base of Israel. Those are the three mitzvahs, which are klal Yisrael mitzvahs, which only a prophet can tell you when to do it and how to do it. Right? No, the prophet needs to anoint the king. The prophet needs to tell you before you can kill Amalek. And the prophet needs to tell you how to build the Beit HaMikdash and when to build the Beit HaMikdash. According to this Gemara. Okay? And the dimensions of what the Beit HaMikdash looks like, a prophet needs to tell you that. And of course, the question is why? Why do we need a prophet for these types of things? What do you think?
Otherwise, it's very subjective. You need someone who has like direct encounter with Hashem.
Okay. These are mitzvahs that don't involve just an individual. They're mitzvahs on the whole Klal Yisrael. And if we need Hashem himself to give us guidance as to what to do. Make sense. So based on that, Soloveitchik suggests that the mitzvah of killing Amalek, if you met an Amalekite on the street today, you would not have a mitzvah to kill him. Only the Klal Yisrael has a mitzvah to kill him in the context of a war against Amalek. And if that happened, then you would. But if there's no HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling the prophet to wipe out the nation of Amalek, then you would not have an obligation to kill that Amalekite. Okay? Now, shroom. This is the machlokes. I'm not saying it's the only opinion. But this is a Soloveitchik opinion based on the Gemara. But you would not have an obligation to kill that Amalekite because it's a nation, it's a mitzvah on the klal of Am Yisrael. Not you as an individual. Okay? And so again, according to Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, based on the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the mitzvah of wiping out Amalek falls on the klal, not on the prat. And therefore, you would not have an obligation to wipe out Amalek. Only an individual, only as a klal if God himself told you to do that.
Okay.
Now, with that understanding, we can go back to the story in Shmuel, when the Jewish people were actually physically warring with Amalek. And that answers up a lot of unclarity in that story. In the story, Shmuel declares before he kills Agag, you have slaughtered the children of the Bnei Yisrael, and therefore I'm going to kill you. The question Soloveitchik asks is, why do you need that whole preface? If he's an Amalekite, he's an Amalekite. You should just kill him. What does it matter if he's already killed other people? Similarly, there's a story where there's an Amalekite who killed Shaul. And I think Shmuel ended up killing him. And he says, he asked first, before he kills him, are you an Amalekite? And he says, yes. And did you kill Shaul? Yes. And then he kills the Amalekite. The question is, why? Why do you need to... What does it matter whether he murdered someone or not? He's an Amalekite. We're at war. So Soloveitchik explains that the din is that if you have a murderous Amalekite who's perpetrated crimes against the Jewish people, he is the one who you're chayiv. He is guilty, and since he's an Amalekite and we're in the midst of war, he needs to be killed. But if he's not guilty of spilling blood, then he would not necessarily be killed. He has to prove his Amalekite descent through his actions. That also helps answer up a strange Gemara in Gittin, or Baba Kama, I think, one of the two. But the Gemara says that the children of Amalek are steiging in Bnei Brak. If you go by Bnei Brak, you're going to find the children of Amalek. The obvious question being, wait a second, I thought Amalekite, once an Amalekite, always an Amalekite, I thought we have to kill them. How could they have ever converted to the Jewish people? But unless it could be that only an Amalekite, a murderous Amalekite, can't join the Jewish people. But if he's a Stam Amalekite, he could even take upon himself seven Noahide laws and join the Jewish people. So it turns out, according to Rav Soloveitchik, Amalekite is less about... I'm not going to say it's not at all about a nation, but it's less about his nationality and more about the actions that he has taken. And only God himself can know if there's a particular nation which is bent on destroying the entire Jewish people, which is pure evil, and therefore you need to wipe them out. But anyone except for God can never do that. Luckily enough, none of this is relevant, because Amalek does not exist. On a physical level, all the nations were mixed up in the time of Sancheirov, and everyone intermarried. So there's no such thing as a pure Amalekite anymore, and therefore the mitzvah is, there's no one to physically, even if there was an individual who is an Amalekite, you wouldn't have a chiv to kill him, but there's no such thing as an Amalekite. So all of this is just in theory, which is good for me, because I don't really love the idea of killing people, even if God told me to do it. I wouldn't really love that. But it happens to be very theoretical, and now at least we have a different way of understanding this figure, that's only God himself as a general nation, because God himself deems this entire nation as evil. Okay? Good. So hopefully that a little bit helps on the moral level. But that does bring up one more question to close, and that is, so then what the heck are we doing remembering Amalek? I mean, why do we have a mitzvah on this Shabbos, Parshat Zachor, to remember what Amalek did to us? The pashtus is so that if an Amalekite comes, we know how to wipe them out. But if there is no more Amalek, then why are we still talking about Amalek? Who really cares? It's no longer relevant. Yeah? You hear the kasha? So, what do you guys think? Why are we still talking about Amalek?
Well, one interpretation of Amalek is that it's a doubt. It's the doubt that we need the Torah to live a proper life, and that about Hashem and reality, and that so by that interpretation, you can still like doubt.
Excellent. So, what you're saying is basically that we have re-understood what Amalek is as what they represent. Not about the people, but what about the concept of what they represent. And one of the most famous explanations is that they represent doubt. Exactly, by many of the Hasidic rabbis. The truth is, in my Hasidic readings, I've chanced upon at least 15, but certainly 10 different explanations about what Amalek represents. Basically, anything that you really don't like, that's Amalek, according to certain sources. But I would say that the two most popular, the ones that make the most sense to me at least, is one, what Rav Soloveitchik explains, is any nation that rises up against the Jewish people and wants to blatantly kill us for no particular reason, as Amalekites did, they represent the spirit of Amalek. And the reading of the parsha of Amalek reminds us to be strong and rise up against that nation. So for example, if Soloveitchik speaks about the Nazi nation, not that halachically necessarily you would have to kill them because they're halachically defined as Amalek, but they represent the spirit of Amalek. And he says, for example, commemorating Yom HaShoah as a way of wiping out Amalek and remembering that we need to fight strong against those who want to kill the Jewish people. And the second explanation that is most famous, so many explanations, is indeed that Amalek represents Suffolk, same gematria as Suffolk is Amalek, says the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And many, many speak about this. And I want to just speak 5 minutes about this concept. So first of all, I read an amazing source on the way here. The Gemara asks, how do we know that Haman mina Torah minayin? How do we know that we find Haman in the Torah? And we all know, of course, Haman is an Amalekite. That's why we read about Parshat Zachor before Purim. So, where's the first mention of Haman? Where's the first mention of Haman in the Torah? It is back in...
There is mention of Haman?
It's an allusion. It says, Hamina Eitazeh! When God says, did you eat from the tree? Think about it. It turns out that the first time that we encounter Haman, who's Amalek, is when there's doubt. When the snake comes and introduces doubt into Adam and Chava's relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I don't know, should I eat this tree? Should I not eat that tree? That is Amalek. So on a Gemara level, this suffix interpretation makes a lot of sense. Also on a Pshat level, the first time literally that Amalek attacks us, it's directly after the Jewish people in chapter, I think, 17 of Shemot start complaining after the sea splits about how we don't have any water, we don't have this, we don't have that. They're complaining, they're doubting, and then who immediately attacks right after that? Amalek. So perhaps you could say that Amalek isn't just doubt. Amalek comes when we doubt. When we don't trust our inner gut, then the doubt sets in. But when we look deep inside ourselves, then that's the tikkun of Amalek. Then that's wiping away the Amalek. That's the inner confidence of connecting to the inner truth that we all know. And with this, I'd like to end off with a story. Rav Shlomo's favorite story about how we wipe out Amalek. You ready for one of my favorite Purim stories? The story goes like this. There was a chosid. I forgot his name. But apparently it's a true story. And he was a little bit of a nebuch. It means he didn't really have so much self-confidence. And he goes up to his Rebbe. His Rebbe, good Purim. And the Rebbe says, let's call him Yankala. Yankala, is that what you're gonna come to me without Mishloach Manos? He says, Rebbe, I don't have any money. Yankala, first of all, that's not the way you say good Purim. How do you say good Purim? Good Purim! With simcha, with joy. So the guy's like, good Purim. No, like this. Good Purim! So Yankala's like, good Purim. Oh, an hour later, finally Yanka's screaming, good Purim! He's happy, he's confident. So then the Rebbe says, good, now go to the Makolet and go buy me some Mishloach Manos. But scream good Purim first. He says, okay. Goes to the Makolet. He walks in and he says, good Purim! The guy's like, don't you owe me like a bunch of thousand shekel? And he's like, good Purim! The Rebbe wants to get Mishloach Manos. He's like, alright, the Rebbe wants, fine. Go get him some wine, go get him some cake. Brings it back to the Rebbe. The Rebbe says, oh, this is the best Mishloach Manos in my life. Now go get for your wife and your children. Good Purim! Goes back. He says, I need some more for my wife and my children. He says, alright, you'll pay me after Purim. He gives him some. He goes back to his house, walks into the door. Normally his wife and his kids run all over him. And this time he says, good Purim! Wifey, kids, get here! He says, what's going on, Dad? We're having a Purim meal and I want to teach you something. What? Good Purim! And he teaches them good Purim. The mom teaches them good Purim. And the Rebbe says that he shushed all of his students when this was happening. He says, listen up. All the angels are listening to the good Purim of Yankala. And Gevalt, after Purim, he goes and he borrowed a debt. He says, good Purim! And the banker says, it's not Purim anymore. He says, I don't care. Give me some money. And lends him some money because he can feel his confidence. And he ends up investing. And he ends up becoming one of the richest people in the whole town. He ended up funding the Hasidic dynasty. And every Shalosh Shittos, they would come through his money, him and the other two dynasties around there. I forget where. He ended up actually, according to Rav Shlomo, being the spokesman for the Jewish people and saving them from a pogrom. And all of this because of one good Purim, because of one self-confidence, believing in your inner truth, wiping away our inner Amalek. To listen to our inner joy, to ourselves, and wipe out the doubts. Because if we look deep inside and we have a connection with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, we have all the answers.
Wow.
Good stuff. Good Purim. Shabbos.
Good Purim.
You hunted.